22 inches and falling. And outside our studios on Friends Plaza in Urbana, it's 71 degrees.
WILL programs are made possible with support from The Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta, Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana. More information is available at 359-7377. Open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm Craig Cohen. A museum in Evansville, Indiana, recently discovered it had a rare work by Pablo Picasso sitting in storage for almost half a century, completely unbeknownst to museum staff. An appraisal of the work revealed it was too valuable for the museum to keep. Mia Partlow of NPR member station WFIU explains.
In the southwestern Indiana town of Evansville, people are a bit baffled after hearing the town's Museum of Arts, History, and Science has had a rare Picasso in storage for almost half a century.
Oh, I thought, oh, wow. You know, I thought, how exciting.
Totally shocked.
Those were Evansville residents Diane Wessel and Bob Earhart. Museum curator Mary Bauer says the piece went unnoticed because of a clerical error.
All the documentation associated with the gift indicated that this was by an artist named Gemeau, which really happens to be the plural of the artistic technique.
That technique is Gemai, which uses layered glass to create 3D art. It remained miscatalogued for almost 50 years until Bauer got a call from Guernsey's auction house in New York City. They were doing research on the special glass technique Picasso used and tracked one of the works to Evansville.
I thought, yes, I do need to check in on that.
Lo and behold, the work in the museum storage area was a rare Gemai, one of only 50 Picasso made. It's called Seated Woman with Red Hat. It's iconic Picasso with thick black lines that mimic his brushstrokes. Since the discovery in February, there have been a flurry of appraisals and meetings with the Board of Trustees and museum members. And they discovered that the very value and rarity of the piece made it impossible for them to keep it. The board voted this month to sell the work.
Well, this was a very difficult decision for the museum's Board of Trustees.
The museum enlisted Guernsey's auction house to help them sell the work through a private sale. Arlen Ettinger is the president.
To suggest that this might be in the $30 to $40 million range, I think, is probably a fair assessment.
And that's precisely why the museum can't keep it. Here, where there is only one guard on duty in the art gallery, it would be nearly impossible to provide enough security. Robert Pittenger is with AXA Insurance. He wouldn't estimate how much it would cost to insure the Picasso, but says his company wouldn't take on the risk of insuring a piece unless it had the right protection. And that's what gets expensive.
Is it hung properly? Is it in an environment where it is climate controlled? Is it an area that is not susceptible to excess light?
At the Evansville Museum, where artwork is crowded on the gallery walls and the entire art collection is only valued at $10 million, modifying the space would cost more than the actual insurance. And the irony is, if the museum had the money from the sale of the Picasso now, it could probably afford to keep it. Guernsey's wouldn't say when the sale of Seated Woman would be finalized, but whether it's 2 weeks or a month, one thing is for sure. The people of Evansville won't get a chance to see it here. Museum curator Mary Bauer.
Part of the joy of the job is to be able to share works of art with the museum community, the Evansville community in the region. So I'm disappointed or sorry that it won't be displayed.
If there is a silver lining, it's that the museum will have funds for new works and special exhibits. The American Association of Museums Code of Ethics says proceeds from the sale of artwork have to be used for shows and preservation. For NPR News, I'm Mia Partlow in Bloomington, Indiana.
What started with a craving and a typo turned into the first and possibly annual Tenderloin Festival and Pun Crawl in Streator, Illinois, earlier this month. Illinois Public Radio's Jenna Dooley reports.
Tenderloin sandwiches are a Midwest favorite, breaded, fried, and topped with a toasty bun. Condiments, optional. Big appetite, a must. Streator locals remember fondly summers biting into juicy tenderloin at the former Silver Frost Drive-In.
Festival co-organizer Marianne Rowett-DeVora says that prompted the weekend tribute.
First part of July, I said something like, I can make a scrumptious tenderloin with the best of them, but I remembered how the Silver Frost tenderloins tasted, and I had a craving for those. And John took it and ran with it.
She's referring to fellow organizer John Eby. They decided while Silver Frost may be gone, there may be other talented tenderloin joints in the area. So Eby started to advertise the festival online.
My fingers were flying faster than my brain was working, or something like that, or my brain was working faster than my fingers were working, and it came off as pun crawl, and I hit the okay, you know, to post it on Facebook, and then I had to take some grief for it, but it stuck, you know, because people really started chiming in, really started commenting that, no, keep it, it makes it unique.
Several area restaurants were featured in the festival, showcasing their own unique recipes for juicy tenderloin. Denise Ritchie and Joseph Giuliano of DeKalb set out on a quest to try all five tenderloins on the crawl, giving them their own stamp of approval with an unofficial rating out of 5 stars.
We're a couple of foodies. We love to cook. So we thought, let's give it a shot.
Yeah. We just thought we'd see what the difference is between all these five places that are making tenderloin. Oh, yeah. This is number 3.
And from what I understand, Chef Tom says we're setting the bar right here.
Yeah, right here, coming out of the fryer. The big point of the fryer, the difference at Chef Tom's, as you see that oil? Nice.
At Chef Tom's, the tenderloin is king. Chef Tom Falling takes orders and feverishly puts coated meat into a deep fryer.
Well, there's so many different styles, but what I do at Chef Tom's is try to reproduce the Silver Frost experience. And so, as I was telling this couple, that I take the tenderloin here and I clean off the fat, the muscle tissue, pound it, and make it daily. So freshness is a key factor. This comes fresh from Chicago, and then I turn it into breaded tenderloins, and here we go.
Chef Tom, this is very, very good.
Very tasty.
Okay.
Best one yet.
At Smitty's in nearby Leonore, the bun doesn't even come close to covering the tenderloin. That doesn't bother the patrons who want to taste the breaded meat. The grill is packed full, and festival organizer John Eby says that's part of the success of this year.
Well, we have been talking about next year, and I don't think we're thinking much further than that. But, you know, these things take on a life of their own. And that's great because it brings other people in.
That's all fine, but what about those puns? Let's leave it to Chef Tom.
This is a lot of people are going to catch up with a lot of old friends. That's a little one.
I'm Jenna Dooley.
2 months until Election Day, and it's still not clear what new voter identification laws will be in effect.
Even if the voter knows what ID to produce, different poll workers may not accept it based on their own understanding of the voter ID rules.
Confusion over state voter ID laws, later on All Things Considered, from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 and from 5 to 7 on FM 90.9.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Busey Bank, Bates Commodities, Normal, Inuka Incorporated, Fairmount, and A-Plus Farms Limited, Pine Village. These business partners join the Friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
A law professor, a botanist, a music historian, and a climate expert have won this year's Balzan Prizes. The Balzans are awarded each year in a variety of subjects and are handed out by a foundation based in Milan and Zurich, Switzerland. Each prize is worth 750,000 Swiss francs. If you want to do that translation of currency, that's about 620,000 euro or about $790,000. And half of the amount must be destined for research, preferably involving young scholars. The winners announced today were Ronald Dworkin, 80 years old, a New York University law professor; Australian Kurt Lambeck, he's 70, he's a climate expert; Reinhard Strom, 70, a German-born music scholar; and David Balcom, who's 60, and the head of the Plant Sciences Department at the University of Cambridge.
And here is the Writer's Almanac from Monday. It's the 10th of September. 2012. It's the birthday of the original Ren Tin Tin, the German Shepherd dog born in Lorraine, France, 1918, who starred in 23 movies for Warner Brothers, starting with Where the North Begins in 1923, and also starred in a radio program, The Wonder Dog, in which he did his own barking and did other sound effects. It's the birthday of the poet Mary Oliver, born Maple Heights, Ohio, 1935, dropped out of college when she was just a teenager, made a pilgrimage to Edna St. Vincent Millay's estate, upstate New York. Millay had been dead for several years, but her sister Norma still lived there. Norma and Mary Oliver hit it off, and Mary Oliver lived on the estate for several years, and it was there that she met Molly Malone Cook, who'd come to pay a visit to Millay. Oliver and Cook fell in love. They moved to Provincetown, Massachusetts. Cook became Oliver's literary agent, and sometimes she impersonated Mary Oliver for phone interviews because she hated talking to the press. They were together for more than 40 years, and after Cook died in 2005, Mary Oliver published Thirst, a collection of poems about her grief. It's the birthday of the Irish author Marion Keyes, born in Limerick, 1963, author of several bestsellers, Watermelon, Sushi for Beginners. In 2010, she wrote a newsletter to her fans talking about her own struggle with clinical depression. She said, "I feel like I'm living in hell. I can't eat, I can't sleep, I can't write, I can't read, I can't talk to people. The worst thing is that I feel it will never end." Earlier this year, she published a cookbook called Saved by Cake, including some basic cake recipes for beginners and also an account of her depression and how the act of baking helped her to recover. Marion Keyes, whose latest novel, The Mystery of Mercy Close, is due out this week. And it was on this date in 2008 the Large Hadron Collider was powered up for the first time. The world's largest particle accelerator, underground in the shape of a ring 17 miles in circumference, near Geneva, Switzerland. And it was there in July scientists announced that they may have found a subatomic particle that is the theoretical Higgs boson, sometimes called the God particle, the particle that they hope would explain how nothing first became something. Named for a young scientist named Peter Higgs, who is now 83 years old and who wept at the announcement. Here's a poem by Mary Oliver on her birthday entitled In Blackwater.